It is time for your KDNK local newscast for this Wednesday morning, January 11th. I'm Steve Cole, live from the heart of Carbondale's Creative District. The U.S. House of Representatives made it easier to cede federal control of public lands to the states last week. KDNK's Amy Haddon Marsh spoke with Will Rausch, Conservation Director for Carbondale's Wilderness Workshop, about what happened and what it all means.
Will Rausch is here with me to talk about some worrisome changes that will affect public lands across the nation, or could affect public lands across the nation. The first is a rules package that the U.S. House of Representatives passed last week that changed the way Congress calculates the cost of transferring federal lands to states and other entities. Essentially, this would make it easier for Congress to cede federal control of public lands. Will Rausch, talk about what happened.
Sure. So this was one of the very first acts of the new Congress. The House of Representatives passed a rules package that essentially changed how federal public lands are valued. We all know that federal lands provide a huge amount of value to our communities, whether that's places to recreate or royalties from timber sales or oil and gas. And the rules change that the House of Representatives enacted essentially says those lands have no value. So if you sell them to the states or convey them to the states, there's no effect on the national budget or the treasury. And that just makes it a lot easier because in the past, if there was an impact on, you know, revenues coming into the federal government, then they'd have to balance that out somewhere else. And now they don't have to. So they can transfer lands to the state and, you know, by their new definition, that doesn't cost the federal government anything.
So essentially, the U.S. House of Representatives just devalued federal lands.
It devalued federal lands in the context of a land conveyance or sale. It basically put its thumb on the calculation that will be used anytime a land transfer or sale occurs. It rewrote that equation to say that these lands are worth nothing, and therefore, if you have a bill that transfers land in the past, you might have to then offset that by, say, raising taxes to reimburse the federal treasury for the lost revenue from ski areas or oil and gas development. Now you don't have to. We lose twice if that happens. We lose the land, and then we also just lose that money, because we're not getting it from the land itself, and there's no compensatory measure that would be put into the bill to generate that revenue from some other source.
Can you give like a concrete example of what it used to be like and what it would be like under this rule change, even if it's hypothetical?
Maybe there was a small piece of federal land surrounded by state lands, and the federal government said, okay, we're going to transfer that over to the state. In the past, the state would have to reimburse the federal government for the benefits of that land, whether that, you know, if there were mineral rights and the federal government might make money by selling an oil and gas lease, or if there was timber on it, the state would have to pay the federal government something for it. And now they essentially wouldn't have to, because this new rules package says that, you know, federal lands basically have no value when they are conveyed or sold to the states. It's kind of a counterfactual statement in the sense that it's pretty clear that these lands provide money for the U.S. government. They provide millions of dollars. But the House basically just said if we're going to get rid of them, then we're going to count that value as zero. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
No, it doesn't, because if Congress wanted to cede federal lands to the states and they wanted to cede, say, the White River National Forest, and it all went to, you know, Colorado, the federal government would definitely lose a lot of revenue because of that, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. You know, for instance, the ski areas all across the White River National Forest provide millions of dollars each year. So under the past set of rules, a bill to, for example, transfer the White River National Forest to the states would have to find somewhere to offset all those millions of dollars that, you know, normally would come back to the federal government. Under the new rule, they wouldn't have to find anywhere else to get that money, because they'd essentially be saying that those lands provide no revenue to the federal government, which is false.
It sounds like a land grab.
It basically makes any transfer more of one. You know, I think any transfer or sale of public land is really a land grab. grab because the states are likely to need to sell some of them off and reduce access. It makes that easier to happen, and it means there's less revenue in the federal treasury.
Representative Scott Tipton, who voted in favor of this, said that no new authority to transfer land out of federal ownership was enacted in the rules package.
He's correct that no new authority is created, but the rule significantly decreases the challenge of transferring public land. So it just makes it a lot easier to do it. And it really runs counter to a lot of what Representative Scott Tipton said during the campaign, where he said, you know, I've always been an advocate for public land. And then literally his first act in Congress is to make it easier to get rid of those.
What do you think that would look like in Colorado, for example, if the state controlled all of the national forests and BLM land?
I guess to put it bluntly, I think state control of federal lands in Colorado would be a disaster financially for the state. It'd be a disaster for local economies. It'd be a disaster for sportsmen and recreationalists, whether you snowmobile or hunt or backpack. Right now, we have access to 100% of our federal public lands. We have access to only 18% of state lands. And those state lands are almost all of them managed to provide revenue for the state. And so that means that that's their main purpose. And so access is restricted to those activities that provide revenue. So it would be terrible for Coloradans.
This rule change now goes to the Senate.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
It's just a rules package for the House. So it's basically kind of laying the ground rules for how the House is going to operate and how they're going to consider bills.
Is there anything that constituents can do about this rule change, and what is Wilderness Workshop doing about that?
Unfortunately, the rule change has already passed. The House has voted on it. We can't stop it. The good thing is that the rule change doesn't actually transfer public lands. What we and so many of our members and folks throughout Colorado are really concerned about, what we're doing and really what our members can do and what the public can do, is contact Scott Tipton and say they disagree with his vote on the rules package because of this, and that they, you know, expect him to follow through on his word to never support transfer or sale of public lands. During the campaign, he made a really big deal out of how he supports public lands. And so, you know, we need to call his office and hold him accountable. And this provides a great opportunity to do that.
Tune in later this week for part two of the interview with Wilderness Workshop's Will Rausch and look at Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski's attempt to gut the Antiquities Act. Colorado's food stamp program provides an average of $1.40 per person per meal and now reaches 59% of eligible residents, but the state still ranks 45th nationally for reaching people in need and loses out on more than $269 million a year in grocery sales. Eric Alatis has more.
More Colorado families who qualify for food stamps, the program known federally as SNAP, are getting assistance. That's according to new data compiled by Hunger Free Colorado. But the state still ranks 45th nationally, and some 350,000 Coloradans are not getting help. Kathy Underhill with the group says 44 of the state's 64 counties have made improvements in the percentage of eligible people who access the program.
I think the big thing to remember is that behind all these numbers and percentages are real people. A lot of children, a lot of older adults, some folks with disabilities. And it means a lot of lost grocery sales and lost economic stimulus, as well as more people going hungry.
She points to a growing body of research showing the program improves health outcomes, boosts employment, and helps kids do better in school. Underhill notes, despite improvements, Colorado is leaving millions of federal dollars on the table and loses nearly $270 million a year in grocery sales. Underhill says increasing pay for frontline workers, better outreach, and streamlining workflow helped Colorado reach 59% of people eligible for food stamps, up slightly from 56% a year ago. But the state still falls below the national average of 74%, and Underhill says 1 in 8 Coloradans struggle with hunger.
It would be wonderful if counties could figure out a way to be open in the evening or on weekends and really think about things from the customer or client perspective even more than they do now.
Colorado made big improvements in how quickly counties process applications. The state has faced fines and a lawsuit in the past for not processing applications in a timely manner. In June of last year, Governor John Hickenlooper signed SB 190 into law, a measure aimed at improving the state's performance delivering services. This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Colorado News Connection.
Improving roads, easing traffic congestion, and making broadband available to all parts of Colorado are some of Governor John Hickenlooper's top priorities for the upcoming legislative session that begins today. Penda Brooklyn has more.
Hickenlooper will again deal with a split legislature with Republicans in control of the Senate and Democrats the House. But he believes this is the year that lawmakers in both parties will come together and reach a compromise on how to pay for transportation.
Every year that goes by, not only does the congestion get worse, but the cost of solving building the infrastructure goes up. In other words, we're falling further behind.
The governor has also pledged to stand strong on the environmental regulations he's backed and the state's health care exchange. He says if Congress makes changes that he feels create problems in Colorado, he will raise his voice loudly. I'm Benta Berkland at the state capitol.